Good morning. My name is Kelty. This is a part of our service that we call charitable giving. So it's a chance for us to talk a little bit about how we as an organization, as a membership, as a congregation, help support French Church. French Church is entirely supported by the generosity of its members. And so there are opportunities for you to give back financially to help support the things that we do here. There's a couple of ways we can do that. One is through the app. If you take a look on your phone through the French Church app or go to the website, there's an easy spot there to click on a button. You can just type in your credit card. You can give a one-time gift, or you can sign up for pre-authorized giving. And that allows us to have a better understanding of the money that's coming into the church so that we can budget more effectively throughout the year. Pre-authorized giving is a chance where once a month or whatever cadence you decide, we can dip into your account without you even knowing and pull that money out and help support the church. You can also do a one-time gift through there or at the back of the church. There usually is a black box. I don't see it, but I feel like it's just hiding. Oh, there it is. It's just behind someone's head. So in a moment, we'll go for coffee. Feel free to linger by the black box and drop in a check or some cash into there to help support the church going forward. I also wanted to remind you that after the service today, we will be wrapping gifts just in the hall on the other side of the building. The church has come together and is supporting a number of families who need a little help this Christmas. And so we'll be gathering there to build the food boxes and to wrap gifts, and we would love it if you would join us after the church. So take this chance, have a quick cup of coffee, and we'll meet back here in a few minutes where Vince will take us through his message. Thank you.
Morning, everybody. Welcome to Friends Church. Is everyone excited about the wrapping after? 20 families, full gifts for everyone, food, the whole works. These are all families who literally would choose between eating and buying gifts for their family. Is that insanely cool? This week, there was one card, the mom, it just blew us away. We were all just like, she had gifts for her kids, and then her gifts were toilet paper, cleaning supplies. Don't worry, we did something good for her, but the families that you're working with and you're helping, it's making a massive difference in their lives, so thank you. Encourage you all to come out after. It's right over there. Come, we'll wrap them all up. We load a big U-Haul. It's a blast. Okay, today I want to start with a story, because we always start with stories, because that's how we do it around here, don't we? This is a story of kind of Calgary right now. It's actually a story that's based in an illness in a medical journal. Somebody has a business. As soon as you say somebody has a business in Calgary right now, we're all feeling like, oof. Right? It's tough out there. And they're fighting to keep their business alive. And they've been fighting as hard as they could, putting everything they had into it. And at first it was kind of just, you know, things are going down a little bit, so if I just give it a little extra push, then, you know, it'll go. But days of that led to weeks of that, led to months of pushing, led to years of pushing. What once was a vibrant person who was so excited about what they had to offer the world, kind of things changed. It's almost like they got sucked dry. In the medical literature, there's this idea that says your normal hormones can only take you so far, and if you try and push harder than that, your body doesn't know what to do with that. So it starts dumping adrenaline into your system. Just keeps dumping it in. Now, adrenaline's meant to run away from a cheetah that's about to eat you. It's not meant for weeks, months, and years of use. This person's life starts to change. Their body starts to change. Their body can't handle this level of stress. The adrenaline's just not working anymore. And they hit a kind of burnout that only if you're working in Calgary right now you get. Anyone felt that burnout? It's tough out here, right? But it's not just work. The question then becomes, why didn't this person take a break? Or maybe a more important question is, why don't we take a break? Why do we just keep pushing? Why is it that suddenly, after a long day of work, coming home, putting your feet up, and watching a little Netflix has this tinge of, like, guilt to it? I probably should be at the gym, or I should probably, doing something productive. People come over to your house, instead of being like, hey, make yourself at home, it's all good. We're running around like idiots trying to make sure everyone's got everything that they need. Do you have a drink? Oh, good. Where's your jacket, right? Families in the morning. Trying to get all your family out the door. Is any parent right now just going like, oh gosh, it's a gong show. And yet the idea that we would just slow things down just seems somehow wrong. I have to admit, I'm a bit of an idiot. But you all know that, right? Come on. A couple years ago, I was really into running. I ran an ultra marathon. So I ran 100 miles in a day and a half. So you run all the way through the day, you run through the night, you run through the next day. She ran with me, so she's hardcore. But you're just basically like, you saw me at the end, right? I looked like basically 2 pounds of crap in a 1 pound bag. I was kind of vertical. I remember they gave me watermelon, and I just stuffed my whole face in the watermelon and just started eating, and I don't remember anything else. I'm pretty sure I had my clothes on at that point. I hope I did. 2 weeks later, I broke my arm, which was problematic because I had Ironman in 5 weeks. So in 2 months, I did a 100-mile run, and then I went and did Ironman. So Ironman is you swim for 4 kilometers, you bike for 190 kilometers, and then you run a marathon. So I did it with like a mostly healed arm. And I remember waking up the day after that just being like, I can barely drive a car at this point. Like if somebody asked me to do my taxes, there is no way I could ever do that. I had dug as deep as I could into the well of what Vince has to offer and used every bit of it. 2 weeks later, I was back at the gym. I was back running my regular schedule. And I had nothing in me. I would get up, go to work, like drag my ass out of bed, go to work, go come home, hit the gym, barely get through my workout, and then just basically sit on the couch. Like I'd come home, sit on the couch. I don't think I'd move until it was time to go to bed. I couldn't get up. So here's the question is, why in the world, after running for a day and a half, and then a bunch of time later running, doing the Ironman with a broken arm, why didn't I take time off? I feel like I earned at least a couple months of rest, right? Why is it that we don't give ourselves a chance to rest? Why is it that we keep pushing and pushing and pushing, and then we take like 2 weeks off and we're right back at it? So I heard a story of a friend of a friend. They went to the doctor because they're really sick. And the doctor's like, you either need to hire someone to run your business or sell your business. You can't work there anymore. You are literally dying. The doctor told her this. If you continue this, you will not make it. Why can't you just take a week off? So let me ask you all, how are you doing with rest? Can you sit down and recharge? Or is there this like low-level guilt where you're like, ooh, I probably should be, I'll just check my email while I'm sitting here, right? I'll just do this thing because if I get this done, then it'll be a little less stressful, right? There's a story in the Bible. It's actually how the Bible starts. The first word of the Bible is Bereshit, means in the beginning. And the idea of this story is, how did we get to this moment? So don't think of this story as like a literal science-y story. Think of it as a story that tells us how we got to this moment. And it starts with God creating the heavens and the earth. That's what the story is about. If you look at the hoops up here, these represent the 6 days of creation. But here's the crazy thing. And let me just read it. By the seventh day, God had finished his work. On the seventh day, he rested from all his work. God blessed the seventh day, and he made it a holy day. Because on that day, he rested from his work and all the creating God had done. 6 days, go hard. Seventh day, rest. The very first story in the Bible, the very first story in our spiritual tradition, starts with we work 6 days and then we rest. Rest. The Jews took this concept and made it massive. In fact, the Bible talks more about this concept than it does about not killing people. Kind of seems like it's an important concept, huh? Seventh day of rest became what's called Sabbath. And the Jewish community has formalized Sabbath beyond anything that we kind of understand. You see, the Sabbath starts on Friday just before the sun goes down. If you work with somebody who's a devout Jew, they'll probably leave work early a little bit on Friday because they have to be home. They light a candle, and then they do no work. None. Until they see three stars on Saturday night. Now, I know in your head you're thinking, oh, that sounds really nice, but let me just tell you what this means. Can you throw up the first one for me? No plowing the earth. So all you gardeners out there, nah. That's work. You're like, but that I like doing that. No. I told my partner, she's like, okay, that's just wrong. I can't be right. What's the next one? Grinding. Anyone grind their coffee in the morning? Y'all are screwed. It's work. What's the next one? Tying. I can't even put on my shoes. I have to get like Velcro shoes, like, you know, old people or something. I don't know. Next one, writing two or more letters. I was wondering, does a single emoji count? No writing, no texting, no updating your social media, no doing nothing. What's the next one? Kindling a fire. Okay, yeah, don't think kindling a fire. If you light a light switch, that's considered kindling a fire. Well, they take their no work seriously, don't they? This isn't rigid in the sense where, you know, if someone is dying, you wouldn't take them to the hospital. It's not that. This is an idea in their head that says, no, we will honor rest. And just in case you want to sneak in a bunch of work that you're calling not work, but it's kind of work, but really it's, yeah, you're just working. No. Nothing. Think sitting on a couch, maybe napping, maybe reading a book. Maybe playing with someone, you know, with your kids or hanging out with a friend. That's it. Your faces are all hilarious right now. You're like, that can't even be a thing. That's not even true. What would your life look like if that's what you had as part of it? Did I have another one up there? Or is that the last one? Oh, transporting an object. That's right. How do I get my dirt bike to the mountains if I can't transport? That didn't make any sense to me either. That's only one. I can't remember off the top of my head. I think it's 314 different examples of what work you're not supposed to do. They take the rest seriously. So I started you with the first story in the Bible. I started you with the whole Jewish tradition. And so now you're thinking, oh yeah, but we got rid of that because that was stupid, right? Because who does that? Jesus brings together his 12 first students. You know, Matthew, Mark, John, Luke, Judas, the whole crew. And he sends them away. And this is how the story goes. Don't think you need a whole lot of extra equipment for this. You are the equipment. No special appeals for funds. Keep it simple. And no luxury inns. Why was that? That's a funny thing to say, huh? Jesus was cheap, maybe? I don't know. Get a modest place and be content there until you leave. If you're not welcome, not listened to, quietly withdraw. Don't make a scene. Shrug your shoulders and be on your way. Then they were on the road. They preached with joyful urgency that life can be radically different. This is a translation called The Message by Eugene Peterson. Isn't that a beautiful phrase? They preached with joyful urgency that life can be radically different. Right and left, they sent demons packing. They brought wellness to the sick, anointed their bodies, healed their spirits. And then the apostles, those 12 guys, rendezvoused with Jesus and reported all that they had done and taught. And Jesus said, come off by yourself. Let's take a break and get a little rest. Translation, it's vacation time. Now, for those of you who grew up in the church, there's this idea of gospel, right? You preach the gospel. Even the gospel takes a break. And you go on vacation. You rest. You put your feet up. You hang out. You do whatever you want. So rest isn't something that stayed in the Jewish portion of the Bible. It's all the way through it. So let me ask you this question, and this is what kind of drove me nuts in preparing this message. With all this from the Bible, how in the world did we get this sin called sloth? Sloth meaning not doing anything productive. The whole first part of the Bible is about not doing productive things. In fact, that thing you did, you ground your coffee in the morning, productive, stop it. Be less productive. Where did they get sloth as one of the core sins of this thing? Does that make sense to anyone? What do you do with that? And as I'm reading through this, I'm looking at this and going, how did this become the thing? In fact, now when we take a rest, so anyone going to go home and have a nap this afternoon? Isn't it funny, though, that the idea of napping seems somehow decadent? Somehow maybe too much? You have permission, Tom. You're good. Somehow this idea of sloth has undermined our ability to rest and recover. It's tainted everything that we do to recharge. That somehow we should feel this level of guilt about doing no work. About being not productive. And I find that incredibly troubling. When we're burnt out, we're overwhelmed, we're scheduled to the nines. Our lives, when we look at our lives, we just go, I'm just trying to get through. I was talking to someone, they said, just Vince, one more week, maybe two more weeks. I've just got to get through this and then I'll be fine. What is your relationship to rest? Now, don't get me wrong. Sloth, a synonym for sloth is laziness. Laziness is lack of productivity, right? You take anything to the extreme, it's bad. There's this idea that if you drink, you know, we're all supposed to drink more water than we do. There's a new thing going through marathons called hyperhydration, where you drink too much and you actually die from it. You can kill yourself with anything good. Anything taken to the extreme is bad. So you not doing anything ever, sitting on your couch nonstop without being able to move, not being able to feed yourself or your family, okay, can we all agree that's not awesome? But what about just take, like, and so just so you know, I am not talking to you. I'm talking to you about something that I struggle with. Because about a year ago, I did a message on rest. This is what I've been able to accomplish in my own life on Sabbath. Once a week, most weeks, I work the whole day. I go to the gym for a couple hours. And then I take 2 hours off in the evening and watch a movie. That's my Sabbath. Yay, Vince, right? That's all, like, a whole day? Oh, geez, there's no way. There's no way. Why is it that we can't give ourselves permission to rest? We have a whole series coming up. It's called Reset. It'll be up in January. One of the messages is the impact of lack of sleep. Lack of sleep has more or does more cognitive delay, or impairment than drinking. You want to know how to do your life better? Rest more. Almost guaranteed in our culture, rest more. Jesus, take a holiday after work. The Jewish community, take one day a week off, 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 do nothing. The whole story is based on, in the beginning, God created 6 days and then he rested. So how are we doing with rest? Okay, let me try something here for, with y'all. If you're open to it, if you're not, just ignore me. There's a way you can cause your body to rest. We can do it even right here. If you just kind of all sit straight a little bit. And everyone, if you can, if you're open, if you don't, just ignore me. But put your hand on your belly. Kind of like really low, like, see how I'm wearing my belt? So below your belly button. Now take a deep breath and try and push your hand out. So you're pushing all the air into your belly. Take a deep breath. And then just let the air slowly come out of your mouth. Deep breath. Can you feel the difference in the room already? That took us, what, 10 seconds? Rest can be everywhere. Rest can be part of every part of your life. So now if you're like me, you're all asking the question, okay, Vince, but what's sloth then? If it's not rest, or maybe it's not general rest, you know, resting all the time, not doing anything, of course, yeah. But what is sloth? I read and read and read for this series. I don't know how many books I read through the Seven Deadly Sins. And there's one book that when I read it, it's like that guy just hit me in the side of the head with a 2x4. His view of sloth was completely different than anything I'd ever thought about. And to tell you about it, let me just share your story with you. There's a guy, his name's Hammond, and anyone remember this reference? He became the head fry cook at McDonald's? Anyone, or is that, am I dating myself there? Okay, the head fry cook at McDonald's was the kid who was like in grade 10, and he got a promotion from like fry cook to head fry cook. And somehow he thought that made him important. That's what this guy is. He thinks he's important. He's not that important. So Hammond's walking through his life as the head fry cook. No one else is respecting him. And this guy named Mordecai basically looks at him and he's like, what's with you? And Hammond is just furious. How dare you not see that I'm an important person and you should respect me? And so then he says this is what Hammond says. Instead of just getting mad at Mordecai, he says this. When Hammond saw for himself that Mordecai didn't show him respect in the way he felt he deserved, head fry cook, he was outraged. But instead of focusing his outrage on one Jew, he looked for a way to eliminate not just Mordecai, but all the Jews throughout the whole kingdom. Wow. The technical word for this is a pogrom. We use the word genocide now. You disrespected me, and I will kill all your people. So to set this story up, I want us to all take a minute and go, can we conceive of any idea or any situation where genocide is justified? Or is this just universally wrong? So if we can agree that this is just universally wrong, I want to tell you the actual story now. Because the main character of this story's name is Esther. And Esther is the niece of Mordecai. In fact, Mordecai raised Esther. But kind of Mordecai's down here. She hit the lottery. She went through this big, well, actually, it was technically a lottery. And she became the queen of the king of the nation. Queen. Queens, plural. Don't think queenie, like Queen Elizabeth. She's less powerful and more arm candy. That's what Esther is. It's brutal. It's just the way it was in those days, right? But she has a modicum of power as the queen. The king chose her out of many, many, many people. So maybe there's a chance that she could do something about this impending genocide. Chances are she won't lose her life because no one knows she's a Jew, but she'll lose every other Jewish person in her life, her family, her friends, her people. But there's one more thing you guys have to know. In this kingdom, if you go to the king without being summoned, pretty much you're getting killed. The only way you could see the king is if the king said, hey, I want to see you, come see me. If you showed up unannounced or uninvited, there's a pretty good chance you're getting killed. So here's Esther going, on the one hand, I need to save my people. I might be able to do something, but the chances of my life making any difference to this issue is almost none. What does she do? What would you do? There's this idea that how do I say this? When we think of a genocide, It's almost like that's like a thorn in the side of our entire world, right? You think of the Holocaust. I can still feel the impact of the Holocaust. It's like there's this thorn in the side of the Jewish nation that we all somehow can feel with them. When I hear stories from Guatemala and I hear of kids dying of malnutrition and I'm throwing away burgers, you know, that I haven't finished eating, there's something that doesn't feel right about that to me. Stupid poverty, like that shouldn't be a thing, right? It's like it's a thorn in the side of our culture. If we take it closer, neighbors who are horrible to each other, families that are fighting and have, you know, all this conflict, it's like there's a thorn in the side of us all the way through our lives in different areas. And we have these thorns that we walk around with. If you're ever going to a family gathering, chances are you're going to run into one. Sometimes the thorns are closer to home. The people we care about most, our partners, our family. They've done something. We did something. Something went wrong. And we're walking around with this thorn in our side. Or maybe it's our own. I have some wound inside of me that I'm not willing to deal with. It's this thorn that I protect all the time. And I don't, like, it scares me because to have to deal with that is just agonizing. And so it's like we walk through our lives with these different thorns in our side, and that's exactly what's going on with Esther. She's got this massive thorn in the side that says, we are going to kill all of your people. And the question is, what is she going to do? And up until this point, I had no connection to sloth in my head. Until I read this guy's name is Avid Kleinberg. He wrote this book on the seven deadly sins, and he said this: the daily struggle against evil is a moral obligation for each of us. In my words, dealing with the thorns in our side is a daily struggle for each of us. Even if its chances of success are small, in the end, a man or a woman must do good day after day in the smallest combats against evil. Even if the struggles often fail to end in victory, we do not have the right to renounce them. When one struggles for justice, sometimes one discovers that the cause is not lost, that the forces of evil and hatred are tired, and a little shove is sufficient to lay them low. Do not succumb to sloth. Sloth is ignoring the thorns in our side. That's what he brought forth. And suddenly, instead of being guilty about resting, something clicked in my head. That's sloth? Not dealing with my anger issues. That's sloth. Not getting enough rest. So I'm a nice human being when I'm driving down Deerfoot. That's sloth. And that's where Esther is, right? She's got this massive thorn in her side that maybe she can do something about, right? But the forces of evil are so heavily against her, it's almost like she has no chance. You all know how this is going to go, right? She spends a bunch of time thinking, and finally she goes, I got to do something. I can't succumb to sloth. She goes to the king, and of course the king's like, hey, great to see you. What can I give you? Up to half of my kingdom. She says one thing, save my people. And he does. She stands against evil. She stands against the thorn in the side of our people. She stands in front of what everyone else wasn't able to do. She stood up and said, no, I need to deal with this thorn. I can't ignore it because ignoring it is sloth. So let me ask you, what are the thorns in your side that you've been ignoring? What are the causes that you go, every time I see that one, it just gets my heart and I need to do something with that? Or family issue, neighbor issue, local issue, personal issue, partner issue. What's the thorn in your side that you're going, I just want to ignore it? And you're staying busy sometimes so you don't have to deal with it. It's like, look, if I do all this stuff over here, I don't have to have that conversation, which is the conversation I need to have. Or if I just make sure I have a lot of stress in my life, I can justify not going to see somebody to say, look, I got this massive thorn in my side. It's my issue, and I don't know how to deal with it. Can you help me? What if we see sloth is not dealing with the thorns in our side that are wrecking the world? Wrecking the world. Suddenly sloth became, Vince, don't take a nap on Sunday afternoon, to, holy crap, Vince, what do you need to work on, buddy? What if we gave up this idea that sloth makes us feel guilty about rest and start saying, what parts of my life have I been avoiding? What parts do I need to deal with? What parts do I need to work through? What if we saw sloth through that lens? What's your week going to look like? Okay, that's technically the end of our Seven Deadly Sins series. How'd you guys do with it? We went pretty deep on this stuff, didn't we? I had a blast with this one. I don't think my ethical framework has ever had as much robust analysis as it had through this series. And I'm sorry, y'all, for all that, right? But I want to leave you with one thing, one last thing about this series as a whole. One of the things I've been reflecting a lot on is this idea of guilt. Sure, I do something wrong, I feel guilty, that's fine. It's a mechanism that helps us correct behavior. How much of these seven deadly sins have woven into our culture and given us a low-level feeling of guilt that we actually associate with spirituality? Spirituality is that thing that I feel guilty about all the time. My question is this. Does that low level of guilt, you know, I took a nap, I'm not being as productive as I should be, I feel pride that I did this really good thing at work, or, you know, I saw somebody had something that I wanted and suddenly I felt envious and, ooh, I probably shouldn't do that. You know, all these feelings that we've, these sins that we've talked about, and we got this kind of guilt that follows us around. Somehow we connect that to the sensation of this is spirituality. And yet, this is the final story I want to leave you with. I was talking with a friend of mine, dear friend, and said, I was hanging out with her husband working on his bike. And she comes up and she says, I'm going to the mall. I need to do some gluttony. And we laughed, you know, like, oh, that's hilarious. But, you know, of course, me, I'm like locked in my brain. So 5 minutes later, I get a chance to talk with her. I'm like, okay, help me out. What do you mean by that? And she said, you know, and kind of as we talked about, she basically said, anything that I buy at the mall that I don't need is gluttony. I said, is that going to stop you from buying things at the mall? No. But I'll probably feel bad about it. And something kind of broke in my heart a little bit that said, somehow the religious tradition thought that making us feel guilty will change our behavior. And sometimes it does, but I don't think on the whole it's a very good way to live. Racked with guilt, beating yourself up, how can you bless the world around you when you're so focused on your own crap and all the bad things you did? How do you have something to give? You eat a piece of chocolate cake, and then you sit there beating yourself up and feeling guilty, like, oh, I'm a glutton. I can't believe I did this. What do you have to offer the world? Pain, guilt, you know, bad feelings. What if you had that piece of cake? Not too much. Remember, no excess. But you had that cake, and you just had the most insanely beautiful moment of pleasure from chocolate. And you shared that with the world around you. This whole series has been designed to try and get you guys to go around guilt, away from guilt, to dig deeper than that and say, no, it's not as simple as that. Everything that you buy that you don't need, we live in the first world. Everything we buy we don't need, right? There's nothing that we need. I don't need my house. It's ridiculous. But what if we lived our lives seeing underneath that guilt and saying, wait, no, I'm going to use the guilt for when I get to excess. When I'm eating so much that it's hurting me. When lust has taken over my life. Not enjoyed and expressed and celebrated when I can't even go to work anymore because, you know, lust has just overwhelmed me. What if we saw our spiritual journey as deeper than that guilt journey? as a journey where we celebrate these beautiful things, and each one of these we've tried to show you the beauty in them. We celebrate them and then share the joy in our heart with the people around us. Would that not make this world a better place? Instead of being these guilty little shriveled up people in the corner going like, everything I do is bad. So here's my challenge to you. Here's our challenge to you. Go out there, live fully, open-heartedly, enjoy things, enjoy your lust, go for it, figure it out, eat good food, drink good wine, and if you do too much of something, think about it. If it's taking you out, okay, stop, but don't kill all of it just because the extremes might hurt you. And then share that joy, that passion. Jesus said, I've come not to hurt you, this is my paraphrase, but to give you a better life. Don't sit around in guilt all the time. Have beautiful experiences and share them with the world. That's the end of the seven deadly sins. Have a great week, everyone. Next week, thank you. Jeff's going to be back next week with the Christmas, one message before Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve, 7:30. The music starts at, no. 4:30. Music starts at 5, and I will say thank you. Come wrap, and I'm going to pass it over to Kelty.
I know what you're thinking. You're like, hey, you were already up there asking for money this morning, which is true. I was. And I'm back. And usually I'm asking for money, and I am. But this is different than the last time. This is, you know, an opportunity. This is a little more personal. And it's a chance for you to think about what this year has meant to you. We do one time per year where we do a special offering for our staff. And that happens in December. So for the last 2 weeks, and this is the final week, we've reached out to you to say, look, have our staff made a difference in your life? Has coming to Friends Church made a difference for you this year? Has there been a well-timed email, a nod as you came in, a message that just seemed to talk right directly to you? If so, this is the chance that you have to thank our staff for the work that they put in, whether in this service, with the kids' service, downstairs, all of those opportunities. We can do this the same way we did the other one. In the app, there's a drop-down that specifically says for the staff Christmas offering. Please take advantage of that. Alternatively, the black box is still available for you at the back, and you can just jot a little note on the front that says it's for the staff offering. This is the last time that we'll make this request this year, so you don't have to worry about hearing from me next week on this one. But I do urge you to think deeply about that and think about the impact that our staff has made on your life this year and use this opportunity to give back. In a few minutes, we'll see you just over in the hall for wrapping presents. Have a marvelous Sunday. Thank you so much.